here with another proof read aloud, the final proof read aloud for September, which is coming out on the final day of September. And this proof read aloud is actually not going to come out the day the article comes out. There's just no way that can be done because the article is going to get published pretty much the moment I'm done recording this shit. Meanwhile, in the Discord, we do have a live studio audience of people listening in who are welcome to question and comment me. If you want to ask a question or state a comment, please use the red question mark emoji and the red exclamation mark emoji, as is now standard practice, so that when I look back, I will be able to easily see them or pick them out from the scrolling text. Otherwise, I am going to hide the live chat so that I can't see it because it is a distraction, and move on to the proof read aloud of this, the fourth article of 09, entitled Introducing Your Character. So, 2 weeks ago, wait, that's not right. It was last week, but it was two articles ago, and that was only 4 days. That was only 4 days ago. And that was only 4 days ago, not last week. Wow. When my update schedule is off, it really Fs with my perception of time. Gotta fix that next month. Anyway, recently, and isn't that just a vague temporal cop-out? Recently, I told y'all that I start my game sessions, not games sessions, game sessions. Recently, I told y'all that I start my game sessions with a long, boring, tedious script that's part recap and part guided visualization exercise. Remember? No? Then go back and read it again. It's effing important. And to answer the question literally everyone, by which I mean two or more of you, to answer the question literally everyone keeps asking me, 10-ish minutes, 15 tops. And I told you that part of that script involves forcing my players to basically recap their characters, which I called reintroducing the character. But because players are inconsistent as F and can't be trusted to get anything right, I came up with a script for them to follow. One that ensures they'll hit the important shit, important for both gameplay and story purposes, and one that keeps the extraneous fanfic purple prose or thoughts and feelings internal monologue bullshit to a minimum of none. And with a few modifications, that script also helps you, the GM, introduce NPCs quickly and effectively. And I promised I'd share that script. So that's what I'm doing. Wow, I nailed that intro, huh? As long as I'm smart enough to stop typing right now, anyway. So, cue the header. Introducing my character. That should be introducing your character. No, I like introducing my character. In fact, I'm going to change the title of this whole thing to Introducing My Character. Especially because a lot of this is written to players, even though a lot of it's written to the GM. So anyway, introducing, colon, my character. Let's talk about character introductions. When a player's character steps on screen for the first time, whether because the campaign is just starting, or because they joined a campaign already in progress, or because they couldn't keep their previous character alive and they're bringing in a replacement, when a PC appears on screen for the first time, it's the player's job to introduce that character to the rest of the group, and to the GM. And because role-playing means sharing details through play, and making choices based solely on what your character perceives, and because there are no telepaths in the party unless you allow psionics, and you don't ever allow psionics, because role-playing is about organic character development through play, introducing a character means telling everyone at the table what their characters see when they look at your character, and nothing else. I start my campaigns by dragging each PC into the action, one at a time, and forcing that character's player to describe the being that just entered from stage right. It goes something like this. As the serving girl gets Aaliyah settled at her table, the door opens and, Bob, tell us who we all see framed in that doorway. And not only do I make the players introduce their characters at the start of the campaign, I make them reintroduce their characters at the start of every single session, which I explained two articles ago, but then I forgot to put a period at the end of that sentence, which I explained two articles ago, period. The problem is that players suck. They suck at everything that isn't eating your snacks and ruining your game, which means they suck at introducing their characters. But really, if players could spout out clear, evocative, descriptive narration, they'd be GMs. So when you ask a player to introduce their character, what you're going to get is a crapshoot, and it'll range from this. So I'm a dwarf, 4'2" and 185 pounds, and I have eyes and beard, hair too. Oh, and an axe, and my skin is I just noticed I have a shield, so you probably see that. Two eyes. I have two eyes. To something like this. Framed in the doorway, your eyes light on a figure of indistinct age and blessed with the lithe grace and timeless beauty of the Fae. The elf stands haughty and proud, sniffing with disdain as he glances around this human drinking establishment. His bright violet eyes shine like amethysts, catching silvery moonlight. He wears a pale lilac shirt of gossamer elven silk beneath a doublet of deep indigo, the color of a moonless, starlit sky. His loose-fitting breeches are tucked into high and supple doe-skin boots. You can almost hear his thoughts as he glances around. Never, he seems to think, have I been reminded so sharply of what I left behind that here and now, in this backwater village inn, surrounded by mud-covered, dung-booted peasants whose short mortal lives I can practically feel ebbing from them with every passing second, for they are... Hey, stop! Angry! Get your hands off! What are you... I can't breathe! Now, I never used to give a shit about this stuff. Character introductions were a great time for me to catch a quick nap. But I recently realized that character introductions and periodic reintroductions are actually really effing important. So I needed a way to get my players to do it right. Somewhere between, let me read my character sheet at you, and now I give you my 16-verse epic, Ode to a Wayward Immortal Spirit in the Kingdom of the Dying. Somewhere way closer to the sheet reading end of the spectrum. Heading. Why bother with this introduction bullshit? Turns out, lots of GMs don't bother with this introduction crap. I've played at lots of tables where everyone just starts playing, and I've played at lots of tables where everyone does introduce and describe their characters and where everyone, GM included, zones the F out and ignores it. You know what, though? Those tables are doing it right, because character introductions are valuable and important even if no one listens. And that's because it ain't the listening that's important, it's the describing. More than just scene setting. RPGs are narrative verbal destrictive. They're destrictive. They're totally destrictive. RPGs are narrative verbal descriptive games of pure imagination. Want to play an RPG? Then you've got to be able to imagine the world in your head. The same world everyone else is imagining, more or less. And that shit starts with good, descriptive narration. That's how the world gets into your head. The characters are part of the world. So how can I say that it's not important for everyone to pay attention to everyone else's character introduction? Obviously, I'm engaging in some standard rhetorical bullshit to help me transition between points while delivering engaging content. But I'm not actually lying. Yes, it is better if everyone listens to everyone else's character introductions, but there's a bunch of other important shit that happens in the brain of the player delivering the introduction. More important shit. And it's got nothing to do with making sure everyone else can imagine his character as anything but a blurry person-shaped blob between them and a marauding band of killer orcs. If introducing your character was about putting an accurate image of them in your fellow players' heads, I'd tell you to draw a picture of your character, or find one on the internet, or use the Hero Forge character creator to create a perfect miniature representation. And I would call this shit describing your character instead of introducing your character. To be clear, I'm not only not telling you to use visual aids to introduce your character, but I am also expressly forbidding you from doing so. I need you to introduce your character in words. Why? It helps you visualize. Visualization means building a thing in your imagined space, creating an imaginary simulacrum that you can almost see or almost perceive in your own head. You know that thing your therapist does where she tells you to close your eyes and picture yourself in a relaxing place as if you could relax knowing this little session of let's pretend is costing you $200? That's visualization, and it's hard. And the older you get, the harder it is. Moreover, we live in an age of constant sensory stimulation, like the stimulation that runs from an absolutely berserk cat who has apparently found some sort of insect flying around the apartment and has just parkoured across my desk, leaped off my chest, and then run into the other room. So there's that. Moreover, we live in an age of constant sensory stimulation, overstimulation. We never, ever want to be bored or unstimulated. That shit actually atrophies your imagination. I shit you not. The more time you fill with YouTube videos and the more silence you fill with podcasts you barely listen to, the crappier your imagination gets. And the crappier your attention span gets too. So cut it the F out. Describing something triggers visualization. Yeah, I know that seems backwards. I know it seems like visualization comes before description, but that's not how it works. Visual and discretion, those are all words, or that was several words that came out as one altogether in a rush to get out of my mouth. Visualization and description kind of loop into each other. Start describing, and you'll trigger visualization. Visualize something, and you can describe it better. Describe it more, and the visualization gets clearer. Describing shit helps you visualize, which helps you describe, which helps you visualize, and round they go. Players need visualization skills as much as GMs do, but they don't get to practice them as often. Introducing and reintroducing characters, descriptively, is the equivalent of running visualization drills. It helps you parse narration. This ain't really a separate point, but it deserves mentioning separately. Players often have trouble parsing verbal narration, imagining the world based on verbal descriptions. They often miss key details and force GMs to repeat myself over and over and over. That's a part of visualization too. So making your players reintroduce their characters also trains them to process your narration better. It helps you remember. Players are always forgetting shit about their characters, and everybody else's too. Shit like what armor they're wearing, what race they are, what they're attacking with, and the fact that they're missing an arm and therefore can't attack with a greatsword, especially given they're a halfling and the greatsword is sized for humans. The best way to remember something is to repeat it over and over. Repeating shit is the best way to commit it to memory. When your brain hears words, it immediately scrounges through the different storage boxes in its memory warehouse for the stuff connected to those words. And every time the brain does that, the connections between the words and the stuff and between the stuff and the other related stuff, all those connections get stronger. That's why repeating something is a great way to remember it. Introducing and reintroducing your character loads it into your active working memory and strengthens the mental bonds between all the disparate ideas that make up your character. Now, actually, I lied. The best way to remember something is to connect words and ideas to sensory impressions. That's why certain smells bring floods of memories and emotions. So when you describe and visualize a thing, because your brain is dumb and can't tell the difference between visualization and actual sensory input, you're connecting all the ideas and memories you have with your character with sensory impressions. Scientifically speaking, you absolutely must force your players to reintroduce their characters periodically if you want them to be any good at imagining or remembering their characters. It helps you roleplay. All that shit above about visualizing and building connections between sensory impressions, memories, and ideas, it all means that introducing and reintroducing your character makes you a better role player. And here, I'm not using role playing to mean talking in character. I never use role playing to mean acting, and you should effing know that. Role-playing is about adopting your character's mindset and then making the choices you would make if you were that character. Which isn't the same as trying to be your character, but that's another story, one I've told before. The more interconnected all the shit to do with your character is in your brain, the stronger the web of neurons tying all your character shit together, and the more quickly and easily you're able to remember it all, the more effective a role player you'll be. Oh, I turned off my keyboard and I can't correct this typo. Every time you reintroduce your character, the character becomes more solid in your brain, more real, easier to imagine, easier to see, and easier to be. Of course, all this shit takes time. Does it work if you read a script? So let's say I've actually convinced you, which I should have, because I made a really solid effing case there. You're ready to make your players introduce and periodically reintroduce their characters. But you and I both know your players are just gonna write out an explanation and read it aloud. An introduction, that should be. They're gonna write out an introduction and read it aloud. Especially if you hand them a Mad Lib script like I'm about to suggest. Does that really get the mental job done that I've described? Yes. It's true that all this shit works better if you're inventing words you're speaking as you speak them. That engages the important brain bits more than reading a pre-written fill-in-the-blanks description. But reading a description prepared in advance from a script does fire up the important brain parts, just not as well. Over time, the practice still adds up. The truth is that lots of players, lots of people really, struggle to speak extemporaneously. Some of us can't even read from a script that we wrote ourselves, as I'm illustrating. Anyway, the truth is that lots of players, lots of people really, struggle to speak extemporaneously. That shit ain't easy. If you make your players introduce their characters without referring to a pre-written script, first, you're gonna get some real crap descriptions. And second, the stress you put on the player will prevent all the visualization and memory formation and all the other crap I said. So you let them read out loud. The benefits ain't as beneficial, but over time, they add up. Moreover, as players read their scripts week after week after week, they start to remember them, which means they refer to them less. This means they start relying on their brain bits to recall the introduction, and they eventually do start getting better at speaking off the cuff. Gamers love the perfect solution fallacy. It's a mental trap that basically goes like this. If something isn't the optimal, perfect, best, ideal approach, then it's no better than the worst approach. Written out that way, it's pretty clearly a stupid way of thinking. But if you're a gamer, you're still gonna do it. Solutions have to be practical. If you can't implement a solution with real, irrational, imperfect people in the real, imperfect, chaotic world, then the solution ain't actually worth a damn. The good introduction formula. Below, I'm going to hand you a script, or at least a list of bullet points, for good enough, practical character introductions. But since you're a GM and not a player, you probably want to know what actually makes the script a good introduction. So let me explain. And those of you who don't want to hear the explanation, you can just skip down to the script, except you can't because you're listening to this in audio and I didn't write that line, or I think I took that line out. And I don't want people skipping what I write anyway. First, the point of a character introduction, and all the shit I'm about to say also goes for non-player characters, the point of a character introduction isn't to describe. It's to evoke. When you describe a character, you ain't trying to get a wanted poster from a police sketch artist. You're trying to conjure an image of the character in the imaginations of those sharing your table. A good enough image. The problem is your imagination isn't good at handling lots of data and detail. But it is good at taking a handful of small details and building complex imagery around them. Saying someone has a hawk nose or a severe hairstyle conjures much stronger images than saying someone has a curved nose or that their hair is done up in a bun. And that's the difference between evocation and description. Evocation's more about emotions, impressions, associations, and fireballs. I just realized I really need to make that joke. and fireball spells. Because the only, like, all gamers know of evocation is that it's a school of magic. I don't think most players even know why evocation is evocation. Anyway, evocation means the sending forth. It literally means to send out words. It is the sending forth of something with your words. Though evocation, to evoke, also means to conjure up or to bring forth. So it is conjuration, hence magical. And that's just one of the fun facts you get if you listen to Angry's Proofread Alouds. Anyway, a good evocative description is brief. It's qualitative. It presents information relative to common experiences. It provides context, and it follows the natural progression of human perception. What does that shit mean? First, a good description is brief and qualitative. It covers the broad strokes and lets the audience's imaginations fill in the details. But it provides the necessary impressions to get the details right, or right enough. I can describe someone's loose red linen pants and billowing green shirt and laced purple doublet, or I can say they're dressed in the eye-catching motley of a traveling entertainer. Second, a good description encapsulates common experiences. Your audience's perceptions and experiences shape what they imagine. The farther something's outside your audience's experience, the farther something is, I can't use a contraction there, the farther something is outside your audience's experience, the farther something falls outside. The farther something falls outside your audience's experiences, the more you have to describe it just to evoke it. In D&D, everything's got to be described relative to humans. Humans are the norm, the average, and if something isn't human, it's going to be compared to humans. Describing a dwarf as short is ambiguous. Am I saying they're shorter than a human, or that they're short compared to other dwarves? The right way to make it clear is to say, Glimbeck is just a little over 4 feet tall, which makes him an average dwarf. Good descriptions also provide context for the details they present. And when a descriptive element has some kind of important significance in the world that a reasonable and reasonably intuitive human native of the D&D, And when a descriptive element has, I have the in the world phrase is extraneous there and it's getting confused with the other mention of the word world. So I'm going to take that out and try that again. And when a descriptive element has some kind of important significance that a reasonable and reasonably intuitive human native of the D&D world could guess, the describer explains that shit. Why must D&D descriptions assume humans are the norm? It's not because humans are the most populous, most numerous, most popular, and most best of all the D&D races, even though they are, but rather because your actual effing players are actual effing humans. Which leads me to that human perception thing. When humans meet other humans, or hypothetically human-like beings, they tend to notice things in a specific order. Most of it's to do with evolution and survival and shit. First, humans note the overall size and shape of a person. Then they try to recognize familiar features, especially faces. Then they take in anything that represents a threat. Then they try to assess the human's standing, role, or status. Then they notice the smaller details. Good descriptions present information in that order because that pattern makes sense to human brains. But, as I said, you don't have to understand or remember any of this shit, because I turned it all into a set of prompts, key points, a script, if you will. Presenting Angry's Amazing Avatar Description Transcription Script. Given that character introductions are majorly important, and given that players are only consistent in their inconsistency in giving everything I said about what makes good introductions and... You know what? F it. I'm a sexy gaming genius, and I wrote a simple set of prompts any player or GM can use to craft a character introduction. You're welcome. There are two ways to use this thing. Two ways for your players to use it. Because you should make them use it. First, they can use the prompts to introduce their character off the cuff. Basically, they can improvise their way through each point. Or, second, they can write an introduction in advance from the script and read it aloud at your game sessions. Either way is fine. Note, though, that whenever a character's details change, say they acquire new armor or weapons or change clothing or lose limbs, the player should update their character's introduction. The introduction must be kept current. The script presents five key elements, and each requires one or two sentences at most, maybe three for a non-human. And it's your job to enforce that shit, and to recognize when your players are using run-on sentences and complex clause formations to get around the sentence limit. Because some of them will. Some of them will. The effing thespians definitely will. Note also that each of the five key elements contains only one truly important detail. That'll make more sense when I provide examples. But basically, of the several different things that fill out the arms, armor, and clothing of the element, only one or maybe two details deserve descriptive adjectives. And when I say that, I mean they deserve one each. If you say your plate armor is well-maintained and polished to a mirror shine, you probably don't need to specify the clothes underneath are also clean and your hair is well-coiffed and all that shit. Your character's anal retentive fastidiousness has been established. Move on. The point is, in addition to keeping your players from presenting too many sentences, also keep them from expanding on too many different aspects of any one key element. But enough prologue, let's get transcribing. The first element, gross physical features. First, describe the character's gender, race, build, ethnicity or features, and apparent age. If the character's a human, use qualitative descriptors instead of numbers. If the character's not human, provide numbers for context and qualitative descriptors. Alan is a tall, broad-shouldered human male, barely out of his teens. He has the fair skin and sandy hair of a Sunderlander and a well-kept growth of beard. Beryllia is an elf. She's a head shorter than a human, lithe and graceful. It's impossible to judge her age. She has long, straight bronze hair and alabaster skin. The second element, arms, armor, and clothing. Next, describe the character's weapons, armor, and clothing. Describe every visible weapon and note where it is stowed or carried. Describe the armor your character's wearing. And then, if your character isn't so heavily armored as to hide most of their clothing, describe the quality and kind of clothing they're wearing. As a note to you GMs out there, if your players can't tell you how they're carrying every weapon on their character sheet and you can't help them figure it out, they're over the encumbrance limit. No math needed. You can't carry what you can't imagine carrying clearly. Alan wears a battered steel breastplate over mail and has a longsword and a scabbard on his hip. A quiver of arrows and a recurved hornbow hang on his shoulder. Over his heavy pack, he wears a patched and faded traveler's cloak. Beryllia is decked in elegant noble's attire. Her long skirt, blouse, and bodice are of rich autumn hues. She holds a gnarled quarterstaff in one hand and has a dagger tucked into her sash-like belt. The third element, symbols and decorations and their meaning or context. Next, I wrote the word nest there. Next, describe any meaningful symbols your character's wearing or displaying. Holy symbols, signet rings, pendants, charms, shit painted on shields, badges of office, marks of rank, and so on. Anything that means anything about the character's place in the world. If the meaning of the said symbol should be common knowledge, say, for instance, the holy symbol of any commonly worshipped god, then you should provide that meaning. If the exact meaning wouldn't be common knowledge, but a reasonable and reasonably intuitive human native of the world would be able to at least guess the significance of the symbol, then you should provide that context. A note to you GMs, it's your job to tell the players what's common knowledge and what's intuitive, so pay attention to that. Alan's shield is painted with three interlocked golden rings, which is a symbol of the Church of the Vassar that represents the king and his knights. While Beryllia wears a lot of jewelry, the plain silver-blue ring she wears stands out. It's marked with a single runic symbol, and it's clearly a signet ring, but what family, order, or group connection it represents isn't known to you. The fourth element, unique feature or signifier. That should be or personality signifier. Now, pick one noticeably unique feature that makes your character stand out. Anything will do. A striking hair or eye color, or style or appearance, a piece of jewelry or equipment, a clothing element, whatever. It doesn't even have to be a thing or a feature. Gestures, mannerisms, and stances that indicate something about your personality work too. Provided it's something your character is always doing. A rigid posture, for instance, or constant nervous glances about. This isn't permission for you to wax poetical about your character's personality. You only get to describe the feature itself, not what it means. Let your table mates guess. If they guess wrong, that'll make for an interesting scene later. Alan has a rigid soldier's posture and never seems to relax. Now, if the unique feature you've picked fits in best with one of the other key elements in this script, mention it there rather than waiting until the end. For example, Barilia's eyes are distinct, so Barilia's player should mention them alongside her other gross physical features. Barilia's an elf. She's a head shorter than a human, lithe and graceful. It's impossible to judge her age. She has long, straight bronze hair and alabaster skin. Barilia's eyes are striking, vibrant purple. They sparkle like gemstones. The fifth element, for reintroductions only, recently revealed fun fact. If you're introducing your character for the first time, you're done. Good job. Take a cookie and sit down. But if your GM's smart enough to do what I say and you're being forced to reintroduce your character at the start of every play session, then end your reintroduction by reminding your table mates of a recently revealed fun fact about your character. By recent, I mean something that came out during the last session of play. By revealed, I mean something that actually happened during gameplay. Interesting backstory elements you wish people would ask about don't count. And by remind, I mean literally just remind everyone that the fact was revealed. Do not give a speech about whatever it is. As for what counts as a fun fact, anything will do. Maybe the party learned you're a wizard, or that you've got a certain combat ability, or that you're from the city of Padma, or that you know how to pick locks, or that you prefer mead to ale. Anything will do. The important thing is that it actually came up in the game, and that you think it's noteworthy. During your first battle as allies, Alain interposed his shield to protect Barilia from an orc's attack. He can protect you if you stay close to him. He's got defender's stance or whatever the hell the ability is called. Woo! At camp, Barilia revealed that she's the daughter of a high elf lord named Valianthe who rules an enclave deep in the Mieran forest. And that's a wrap. There it is. Angry's amazing avatar description transcription script. Just string the pieces together into a paragraph and you've got a character introduction that doesn't totally suck. It's as simple as that. Unless you're a GM. Angry's amazing NPC description transcription script. Let's be honest. If you're reading this, you probably ain't a player. I wrote the amazing description transcription script above as if I was talking to a player so you could cut and paste it and hand it to your merry band of hopeless goobers, but I know only GMs are still reading. So, Mr. or Miss GM, what can you do with this shit? Apart from forcing it on your players, that is? Well, you can use it to quickly and easily introduce any NPC ever. Seriously, the format's a perfect way to introduce any character in any game, extemporaneously or written in advance in a text box. You just have to make a few tweaks. When to introduce an NPC. First, it's like this. You should properly introduce any NPC the players are about to actually interact with, or that you're giving the players, an opportunity. I completely dropped the phrase an opportunity, or that you're giving the players an opportunity to actually interact with. If they're just shopping and the NPC is just background, they don't need an introduction. They're a prop, not a person. Second, you should reintroduce an NPC the first time the players interact with it in a given session. But each time they return to that NPC for more interaction in the same session, don't reintroduce the NPC. Say the players meet Otto von Dunderbar, Brewer Extraordinaire, for the first time. Introduce Otto. They go gather some rare ingredients for Otto and return to Otto in the same session. Don't reintroduce Otto. Two sessions later, the players need a Revelcatered, so they visit Otto. Reintroduce Otto. They do a quest for Otto, but it takes two sessions to complete. When they return to Otto, two sessions later, reintroduce Otto. By the way, when you don't reintroduce an NPC, but they reappear on camera for a second time, there's a cool trick I like to use called the short desk. And it's also a trick I use in all my narration, even when addressing player characters. I should tell you about it sometime. It's cool. Why is this when to reintroduce shit important? Because of the cumulative one sentence per introduction rule. You absolutely cannot provide a full player character length introduction for every NPC in your entire world. 10 to 15 sentences of narration for every background extra the PCs swap words with is too effing much. Hence, the cumulative one sentence per introduction rule. The first time you introduce an NPC, you've got to cram their entire description into one normal length sentence. When you next reintroduce the character, you can use two. If you reintroduce the NPC again at some future session, you get three sentences. See how this works? But even if the NPC has been reintroduced a dozen times, you should max this shit out at five sentences or so. By the way, if it ain't clear from my examples, you don't actually have to count sentences. Just eyeball it. Also, by the way, if an NPC actually joins the party for one or more entire sessions, they should be reintroduced at each session as a PC. But the minute they leave the party, they're back down to five sentences. Even though you've got as few as one sentences to work with, that doesn't mean you can leave anything out. You need to provide a complete, evocative description of every NPC the players interact with. How can you do that if you've only got one or two sentences to play with? Accentuate the important. First, figure out which key elements of the normal script and which components of those elements are the most important. Defining elements for the or are the most important defi- whoa, there's like two extraneous, something terrible happened with punctuation there and it's awful. First, figure out which key elements of the normal script and which components of those elements are the most important defining elements for the specific NPC you're introducing. Race, ethnicity, or appearance, gender, and age, they always matter. Almost always. And unique features are almost always useful, provided you don't overdo them. For the rest, the NPC's role in the game determine what bits of their description are most important. If the NPC is a noble, or a priest, or a guildsman, symbols and decorations are important. If the NPC is someone the party is going to fight, or might fight, or who's ready to fight if they have to, like a soldier or thug, then equipment's important. For normal people, clothing's enough. Use words with high encumbrance limits. Remember what I said about focusing on qualitative features and impressions instead of specific details? That's even more important when you've got such a limited word count. When you describe someone as a soldier or guard, you've actually provided a pretty evocative description, particularly if you add an adjective. Bored guards, alert guards, lazy guards, elderly guards, suspicious guards, and sneering guards are all very different, and your brain is already conjuring a different image for each, and that's thanks to two words. The action loophole. There is a sort of cheat code that'll get you around the one cumulative sentence per introduction rule. Actions aren't introductions. If you bounce between introduction and action and back again, you can sneak some extra introduction into the game while also making the character more dynamic. Let me illustrate this shit with an example. Heading, an example to illustrate this shit. I'm going to end this whole thing by showing you how the GM script fits together and how a character's description evolves with repeat appearances. Suppose the PCs visit the buxom Baroness in Frostwind to rent some cheap rooms for the night. In his first appearance, I'd introduce the landlord thusly. The landlord is a barrel-chested thug of a man with a limp and an iron-shod cudgel hanging at his hip. If I wanted to activate the interwoven action cheat code, I'd do this instead. A barrel-chested thug of a man limps over to greet you. Despite his age, he's strong and well-built and clearly comfortable wearing the iron-shod cudgel at his hip. "Name's Cudge," he growls, wiping his hands on his permanently greased and gore-stained apron. "It's my inn. What do you want?" Now, suppose two sessions have gone by and the party's returning to their rooms at the Buxom Baroness after an adventure in the wild. When you enter the common room, you see Cudge, the landlord, filling tankards from a keg for a rowdy crowd. He's a tall, powerfully built man, well into his middle years, and healthy despite his permanent painful limp. His build, watchful eyes, and iron-shod cudgel tell you he's no one to mess with. Now, that's not formatted properly. Fixing one little thing, and then I'll keep reading. Suppose the party accidentally burns the Buxom Baroness down. The PCs promise Cudge they'll gather the money to rebuild the place, but Cudge refuses to leave them alone until he's got the money in hand. So the party's got a new member, a limping street tough turned landlord. And since he's a full-on party member, he gets a full-on introduction every session until his inn's been rebuilt. Tall and well-built, Cudge is a human man in his late 40s. He has dark brown eyes and a fringe of black hair around his bald scalp. He's stuffed himself into a boiled leather cuirass, and he wears stained and faded woolen traveling clothes and old boots. He has an iron-shod club hanging at one hip and a crossbow and a case of bolts hung at the other. A copper coin of the realm with a hole punched through it hangs from a leather strip around his neck. Some kind of keepsake or sentimental token. Wrong word there again. I'm a little bit of a mess today. Cudge walks with a permanent limp, favoring his left leg and sometimes wincing painfully when he steps wrong. Last session, you learned his leg healed badly after being broken many years ago by guards at Black Razor Prison to stop his repeated escape attempts. Of course, the minute Cudge is back to filling tankards and changing sheets, he loses all those beautiful sentences. Such is the life of an extra in a hero's story. And that is the end of this proofread aloud, and also the end of September, so I will be back probably in like 3 days to get the first article of October out so that I can stay on track despite the non-convention coming up. Thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you again soon, and click.